developers. Microsoft began with MSX, an 8-bit operating system introduced in 1983. It followed this with a Japanese version of BASIC that ran on machines made by NEC, the Japanese market leader in PC sales, as well as on IBM-compatible machines. Microsoft started licensing a Japanese version of MS-DOS in 1983, although this became popular only with the rise in sales of 16-bit machines after 1987. Microsoft now builds Japanese versions of Windows, Windows NT, and all its major applications. Its Japanese subsidiary, which is part of the Desktop Applications Division, also oversees the translation of key applications products into Chinese and Korean, as well as Japanese. In Europe, Microsoft set up a marketing company in 1982 in the United Kingdom and soon moved into France, Germany, and other countries. Apple then had 50% of the European market, but Microsoft convinced several European PC manufacturers to ship MS-DOS and BASIC as software products bundled with their PCs. Microsoft helped its cause by quickly translating the BASIC manual into European languages and producing European language versions of Multiplan. European sales of the IBM PC after 1983 to 1984 also greatly encouraged European PC companies to adopt MS-DOS as their operating system standard. Antitrust concerns. A huge shadow hanging over Microsoft's success has been concerns about potential antitrust violations. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, FTC, began an inquiry into Microsoft's practices in June 1990. At Novell's insistence, the European Union launched a similar investigation. Although the FTC deadlocked in August 1993, the U.S. Justice Department continued the probe and reached a consent agreement with Microsoft in July 1994. At the same time, Microsoft reached an identical agreement with the European Union. In February 1995, however, a U.S. federal judge, in an almost unprecedented move, refused to ratify the Justice Department settlement. He decided this on the grounds that the agreement was too narrow, applied only to future practices, and did nothing to remedy Microsoft's current domination of the operating systems business. In particular, the judge was concerned that the agreement did not deal with Microsoft's use of a common industry practice of pre-announcing new products, vaporware, which can deter sales of competing products, nor did it deal with Microsoft's ability to leverage its near monopoly in operating systems into the more competitive field of application software. The Justice Department had agreed to relatively narrow terms because it is difficult to prove broad anti-competitive practices in a court of law. Microsoft and the Justice Department appealed the court ruling and won. Even prior to this decision, Microsoft had been complying with the original agreement in the United States and Europe. The European agreement did not need court approval. The July 1994 settlement contained three key elements. First, Microsoft agreed to stop granting large discounts to licensees if they pay a royalty per processor or computer shipped, rather than per copy of the software shipped. This type of contract covers about 60% of Microsoft's operating system sales. Second, Microsoft agreed to abandon long-term contracts that commit computer vendors to buying particular volumes of software several years in advance. Third, Microsoft agreed to end its policy of strict non-disclosure agreements with independent application software developers. Microsoft had required that beta testers and other companies not disclose details of its operating systems for 3 years after the system was introduced into the market. This restricted the activities and mobility of application software developers in other companies, whereas Microsoft was free to recruit developers from anywhere and have them work on applications sold by Microsoft. In these negotiations, Microsoft also reaffirmed that it would not withhold information on new products from competitors or customers, although it retained the right not to license or publish its source code. Even these relatively mild restrictions have increased competition in operating systems and added some volatility to Microsoft's operating system sales, as they open the way for hardware vendors to purchase competing systems. This is already occurring in Germany, for example. Europe's largest PC vendor, Vobis Microcomputer, started in the fall of 1994 to ship PCs with OS2 and Windows, but not MS-DOS. As a result, approximately 20% of European PCs now come with OS2, twice the number in the United States. This figure is about 40% in the German market. Since these machines come with Windows as well as OS2, it is not clear which operating system people are actually using. No other PC vendor followed Vobis's lead, and Vobis also plans to ship PCs with Windows 95 when this arrives. But Microsoft now faces at least a slightly more difficult task to establish new products as de facto standards. Vobis also negotiated a change in Microsoft's per-processor licensing policy for Windows 3.1. As of March 1995, it is paying Microsoft only for copies of Windows 3.1 that it ships with its PCs. We also believe, however, that the terms of the consent agreement will probably have little impact on Microsoft's worldwide market share or financial earnings. Nearly all hardware vendors continue to bundle MS-DOS and Windows on their machines, even if they also load OS2. The Microsoft products have a huge installed base and thus are already de facto industry standards. Furthermore, Microsoft can still use volume discounts and exclusionary licensing terms to push Windows 95 and future versions of this and other products. Users who adopt a competing product have to worry about potentially losing access to the thousands of existing DOS and Windows applications. Not even Windows NT and Windows 95 run all old applications perfectly. For these reasons, whatever the terms of any antitrust agreement, only a few hardware vendors are likely to risk not offering Windows 95 or future enhancements of it on their PCs. At the same time, however, Microsoft is altering its behavior as a result of government antitrust actions. In particular, company executives decided in May 1995 to abandon their efforts to acquire Intuit, which Microsoft first announced in October 1994, after the U.S. Department of Justice filed a suit to block the merger. Principle: take advantage of being the standards provider with new products and product linkages. Pricing, marketing, and distribution arrangements that promote volume sales have helped establish Microsoft as a company and some of its products as industry standards. But to maintain and extend its market positions, or to sell new products in new markets, a standards provider may also try to take advantage of its influence over the product architecture. Being the standards provider may also give it an advantage over the network of players that adhere to a particular architecture, such as the technical standards that define how products work with MS-DOS and Windows. In Microsoft's case, this includes makers of application software, as well as producers of software development tools, hardware peripherals and drivers, such as printers and monitors, and other products designed to work with Microsoft operating systems. A 1994 quote from innovation columnist Michael Schrage captured the aims and achievements of Bill Gates and Microsoft as the standards provider. Who understands the business of standards better than anyone? Probably Bill Gates and Microsoft. Microsoft really isn't in the software business, it's in the standards business. Microsoft succeeds not because it writes the best code, but because it sets the best standards. Microsoft Windows, the personal computer software that made Gates a septibillionaire, was nurtured and developed to be a standard, not just another operating system. Microsoft's goal was emphatically not the maximization of revenue or even market share. It was creating relationships with customers, software developers, and microprocessor firms like Intel to give as many good reasons as possible to support, strategically, financially, and technically, Microsoft's operating systems. These networks of relationships are what makes a standard something more than a product. The standard is not the product of a company, it's the byproduct of these networks. Managing the standard means managing these networks. Providing the standards. There are four main elements to the hardware and software architectural standards for a personal computer. the microprocessor, the operating system, the data controller, called a bus, and the video graphics system. These determine interfaces for sending and receiving data and commands between the operating system and the hardware logic and memory chips, between the operating system and applications programs or network communication software, and between peripheral device drivers, the software that runs the printers, monitors, keyboards, mouse pointing devices, and so forth, and the operating system and applications programs. Because users demand backward compatibility, no one company can arbitrarily change any of these elements today, as opposed to earlier days in the PC industry. Microsoft, for example, cannot change elements of Windows that maintain compatibility with existing applications, including DOS applications and those written for Windows 3.0 or 3.1. Senior Vice President Brad Silverberg, a former developer at Borland and Apple, pointed this out as one of the key reasons why his group at Microsoft did not improve Windows earlier. Windows 3.0 was pretty big and pretty slow. 3.1 made a lot of improvements, but at some point, you can't break compatibility either. It's the interfaces. Some of them define the APIs through the applications. In some ways, if we could do them over again, we know how we could do it so we could write the system faster. But once you have those interfaces, you're pretty much locked. You can't just change them and break applications. A system like we have, we don't own it. The ISVs, independent software vendors, own it. We, the Windows MS-DOS group, exist for one purpose, which is to run applications. And if you break an application, you don't have a reason for being anymore. Nonetheless, the providers of the key hardware and software technologies, Intel and Microsoft, both exert tremendous influence over the evolution of their de facto standards for the PC microprocessor and the PC operating system. And Microsoft is especially well-placed to take advantage of its position. It produces complementary products, applications, as well as key enabling technologies, such as OLE. Thus, it can and does create technical and marketing linkages that support sales of every major type of software product. Complementary products. Windows is complex, but it is the environment to which nearly all software applications writers, as well as makers of printers and other peripherals, adhere. Microsoft releases enormous amounts of detailed information about its new products, even before selling them commercially, at industry conferences, as well as with beta releases to customers and software development kits to applications programmers. Microsoft people answer questions from applications developers from any company. But Microsoft designed Windows as well as MS-DOS, and its developers understand the intricacies and idiosyncrasies of these systems better than anyone else. From 1988 to 1995, both the systems and applications groups also reported to the same executive, Mike Maples. He, as well as Bill Gates, openly encouraged the movement of people and sharing of technical knowledge. Gates also admitted in a March 1995 interview published in the Wall Street Journal that there is no Chinese wall between the applications and systems groups, saying, "We don't block input going in either direction." There is no substitute for having the designers of the standard right across the hall or the lunch table, in the next building, or on the same development team. Some industry observers have claimed that Microsoft applications programmers have a particularly unfair advantage in the form of undocumented calls or low-level application programming interfaces, APIs, found in Windows as well as in MS-DOS. APIs are code routines that activate functions in the operating system. They are necessary to write applications programs. The concern is that Microsoft developers probably have access to these lists of calls and probably use them when writing applications. This may be true in some cases, although how important these are for applications development is unclear. Dave Moore argued to us that many undocumented calls exist simply because developers have decided not to use them. He also explained that many calls are there so that operating systems developers can perform internal debugging or test different functions, rather than to assist applications programmers. Even without considering the issue of APIs, however, Microsoft has utilized its position as the provider of Windows. It has made particular investments and commitments, as well as adopted particular standards and policies that mutually reinforce its applications and systems products. For example, Microsoft managers made an early commitment to Windows as their new standard environment and quickly authorized graphical versions of Microsoft's main applications. These products successfully challenged Lotus and WordPerfect in the spreadsheet and word processor markets. Both of these competitors had been the market leaders by far when Windows first appeared, but both also hesitated to adopt Windows and delayed introducing graphical versions of their products. Their DOS versions worked with Windows, but were not as easy to use or as powerful in features. Gates recalled the advantage this gave to Microsoft. At the time that Windows came out, our competitors and applications paused, and in doing that, it took them a long time to come out with their first Windows version that many people would have deemed adequate. And it's only recently that they either have come out with or are about to come out with decent Windows versions. So we've had all that time to continue to move ahead and lengthen our lead. Microsoft has also designed the Office Suite and the Microsoft Network to work well with Windows 95 and Windows NT, and it has every intention of building more applications that take full advantage of features in these operating systems. Gates made this intention public in the fall of 1993. "We fully exploit all the user interface capabilities in Windows as we enhance desktop Windows through a project that's codenamed Chicago, Windows 95. We'll be there first, taking advantage of it. We see a lot of opportunities to integrate our applications in the shell, not only in Mail, but all the workgroup functions, the file searching functions. The advances in user interface will be right there with Chicago, updating the applications in a rich way. Likewise, for the high-end version of Windows, we're committed to fully taking advantage of that with our applications." Key enabling technologies. Object linking and embedding, OLE, provides an excellent example of how Microsoft can take advantage of its position as the standards provider, in this case by creating a key enabling technology and bundling it with an operating system. Microsoft also leads the industry in OLE usage, both for applications and operating systems development. OLE is, again, a complex and still evolving technology. Nonetheless, Microsoft has made this into a critical element of the application's programming environment for Windows. As with MS-DOS and Windows, Microsoft developers are the providers of OLE, and they understand its intricacies and idiosyncrasies better than anyone else. As long as they maintain compatibility with older products, they are in an excellent position to direct OLE's evolution and lead the way in taking advantage of new capabilities in the technology. The most recent example of this is distributed networking in a version of OLE now under development, and Microsoft's plans to use this in the forthcoming Cairo upgrade to Windows NT. Microsoft made an early version of OLE available to outside developers in the Microsoft Foundation Classes C++ library. It also held numerous specification reviews, as well as an OLE developers conference attended by 1,000 people, before releasing OLE 2.0 to the public in 1993. In addition, Microsoft has published volumes of detailed technical information on OLE and continues to hold conferences for developers to discuss the future evolution of the technology. Nonetheless, as the providers of the standard, it is not surprising that Microsoft first used the technology, incorporating OLE 1.0 in PowerPoint during 1990 and in Excel during 1991. These were to some extent just early experiments, and Microsoft people have disagreed internally over how much to invest in OLE because the current technology has many technical limitations. In any case, outside developers did not widely use the technology until Microsoft included OLE 2.0 as a set of extensions to the Windows APIs and made this available with an updated software development kit for Windows. OLE 2.0 is particularly important because it lets software developers create products that manipulate or share objects and information in extremely useful ways. For example, users of OLE-enabled applications can edit different kinds of objects, for example, a block of text, a spreadsheet filled with data, or a drawing, within the context of the original document they first opened. The menus and tools of the host application change to that of the object being edited, but the context remains the host document. In addition, OLE 2.0 lets users drag and drop OLE objects from one application to another. For example, users can take a spreadsheet of data from Excel or Lotus 1-2-3 and insert this into a report written in Word or WordPerfect. They can then edit the spreadsheet while in the word processor, but still use the spreadsheet's features. Perhaps most important, OLE 2.0 objects can pass data and messages between applications. This makes the objects programmable and allows applications developers to create an integrated set of programs that share functions, like text processing or drawing. The result is that application interfaces and functions appear more consistent to users and take up less disk space because the software producer does not have to duplicate the same features in the different applications. Both Excel and Word do text processing and printing, for example, and can share these as well as other features within the Office suite. See the discussion of OLE and Office in Chapter 6. OLE 2.0 has already become a standard technology for Windows applications developers. This is because of its technical benefits, as well as Microsoft's adoption and publicity, inclusion within the Windows Software Development Kit, and current availability, in contrast to merely proposed competing standards for sharing objects, such as from Apple and IBM. Outside users include Lotus, with the Lotus Smart Suite, as well as Lotus Notes, which relies heavily on OLE 2.0 to create distributed database objects. Novell also uses OLE 2.0 in 5 applications, including the WordPerfect Office Electronic Mail and Scheduling product, as well as the flagship WordPerfect word processor for Windows. To make OLE into more of an industry standard, Microsoft is developing a Macintosh version and has teamed up with DEC to try to define a next-generation common object model. This incorporates technical specifications for distributed objects from the Public Object Management Group and Open Software Foundation. Still, Microsoft appears to be the most enthusiastic and expert user of OLE. Visual Basic for Applications, which Excel incorporates, utilizes OLE to allow users to automate tasks and customize applications by mixing and matching different functional objects. Windows 95 and Cairo also make extensive use of OLE. Cairo, for example, will allow users to create documents and applications by mixing and matching local objects, those on the user's computer, with remote objects, those on other people's computers linked through a network. It will similarly handle multimedia objects. Again, as the provider of both the NT and Windows 95 operating systems, as well as the OLE technology, Microsoft seems to have an advantage in commitment, technical understanding, and technical influence on future versions. This is true even if it shares all preliminary specifications and volumes of documentation with other applications developers. To be fair, however, one can also view both OLE and Visual Basic as extremely useful standards and technologies that Microsoft has provided the software industry. In addition to Microsoft, thousands of applications developers are effectively using these tools to build commercial software products and custom applications. Product linkages. Perhaps the most striking examples of Microsoft's potential ability to leverage its position as the standards provider involve Windows 95. As we explain in more detail later, Windows 95 will allow users to access the new Microsoft network directly from within the operating system. Microsoft will then offer its customers a variety of online products and services. In addition, Microsoft has already used the expected popularity of Windows 95 to boost sales of Windows NT, as well as to make it difficult for IBM's OS 2 to compete in the future. Microsoft initially had trouble marketing NT 3.0 for a variety of reasons mentioned earlier. In particular, since Windows 3.1 has been the de facto mass market standard and only runs 16-bit applications, Microsoft could not convince many hardware vendors or customers to load their PCs with NT. NT runs 16-bit Windows applications slowly and needs specially tailored 32-bit applications to take full advantage of its advanced capabilities. In turn, applications developers have hesitated to write 32-bit applications because NT did not sell well at first. To solve this chicken-and-egg problem, Microsoft has pushed applications development for Windows 95, both within its own groups and in outside companies, so as to support NT. Both NT and Windows 95 have 32-bit architectures based on Win32, so they have the same compatibility standards for applications. Thus, if applications developers write programs for Windows 95, then they automatically write for NT. These new products should help Microsoft sell more copies of NT to customers who want features and networking capabilities not available in Windows 95. To meet this twofold objective, ensuring the success of Windows 95 and boosting sales of Windows NT, Microsoft has used the lever of Windows compatibility and the Windows logo. At the same time, reducing incentives for applications developers to write for Windows 3.1 will hurt IBM. While OS 2 can run applications written for Windows 3.1, it cannot run applications written only for Windows 95, even though both OS 2 and Windows 95 are 32-bit operating systems. Having the Microsoft Windows logo on a company's applications product certifies that it works with Windows 3.1. Approximately 75% of the companies that write applications for 3.1 have licensed the logo for their packaging. In late 1994, however, Microsoft announced that only applications products fully compatible with both Windows 95 and Windows NT 3.5 will be able to use the Windows logo. Microsoft then introduced new licensing terms that require applications developers to upgrade their products to 32-bit architectures, adopt the Windows 95 user interface, demonstrate compatibility with the Microsoft plug-and-play standard, and rework applications to handle long file names. In February 1995, Microsoft partially backed down on the logo issue, allowing applications producers who wrote programs for Windows 3.1 to use the old Windows logo for a certain period of time. To use the new Windows 95 logo, however, companies must meet the new compatibility requirements. Microsoft has also established an independent testing facility run by Veritest to check whether applications producers are meeting its architectural standards. Because most applications developers will want their products to run on the latest version of Windows, they have little choice but to write for Windows 95 and Windows NT. In addition, companies such as WordPerfect, now part of Novell, and Lotus both delayed developing products for Windows 3.1 when this came out and saw their market shares decline drastically. It was therefore unlikely that they would delay efforts to build products compatible with Windows 95. In fact, they decided to design 32-bit versions for Windows 95 simply to keep pace with Microsoft, which began shipping 32-bit Word and Excel products in November 1994. Principle: integrate, extend, and simplify products to reach new mass markets. Microsoft has devoted enormous resources during the 1990s to developing products that bring formerly distinct functions together and are much easier for customers to use. With low prices and easy delivery mechanisms, one box or one telephone call over an electronic network, these new products can reach ever larger numbers of potential customers. The Office Application Suite, for example, packages functions once separated in Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, and costs about the same as just one product did several years ago. Windows 3.1 and MS-DOS, and now Windows 95, combine in one low-priced package many features that users once had to buy separately. A screensaver, terminal emulator, clock, calculator, calendar and schedule, data compression program, antivirus utility, diagnostic tools, email, fax, networking software, and others. More of this type of packaging is underway in other new products, such as for the novice home consumer. This is no accident. Microsoft is building up its expertise in areas such as office equipment networking and multimedia titles. It is also experimenting with how to merge functions once separated in operating systems, applications programs, and network communication software. Along with its ease-of-use research and experimentation, these efforts are moving Microsoft closer to the computer novice and the average home consumer. The underlying strategy is simple. If computers are easy enough to use, and if software is easy enough to obtain, then there will be billions of potential new customers, and unthinkable numbers of potential applications, services, and individual transactions for which people will pay money. To be sure, Microsoft is not the first company to offer products or do research in these new areas. Many large and wealthy companies are also already present in or entering fields such as office networking, consumer software products, and information highway services. Nonetheless, Microsoft is again entering relatively early, certainly before the mass market has truly arrived. And this time, it comes with tens of millions of existing Windows customers, billions of dollars for R&D and acquisitions, an aggressive but flexible strategy, and thousands of talented research scientists, software developers, program managers, software testers, and marketing specialists. In the workplace, the Windows operating system has scalable capabilities. In theory, smaller versions of the program can run on machines ranging from tiny handheld devices to networked PCs linked through products such as the Windows NT server. In practice, this scaling has been difficult to achieve. Nonetheless, since around 1992, Microsoft has been laying the groundwork to connect, through Windows, any device with a microprocessor. It has made the most progress to date on connecting office equipment. This is an area that Xerox and IBM have experimented with unsuccessfully, but it still represents a potentially huge opportunity to extend the Windows technology to another large group of users. The key effort, initially called Microsoft at Work, is a collection of networking and interface technologies that aim to connect telephones, fax machines, printers, copiers, and handheld devices, then control them through a Windows PC. A separate team, now located in Microsoft's Personal Operating Systems division, has built a system for fax machines, which Microsoft began selling in January 1995. Although the effort has not turned out as well as Microsoft managers had expected, more than 70 major office equipment manufacturers, including Compaq, AT&T, Ericsson, Intel, Motorola, Philips, Sharp, Toshiba, Hewlett-Packard, NEC, Northern Telecom, Ricoh, and Xerox, have signed up to license Microsoft at Work. Windows 95 incorporates this standard as well. Another growing workplace market is groupware, pioneered by Lotus Notes. This connects multiple PCs over telephone lines or direct wiring, letting them share the same information databases, as well as automatically updating and replicating files that users have changed. Notes also provides advanced electronic mail capabilities, handling both text and graphics. Notes has about 1.4 million users, and a large new owner in IBM. But the number of networked computers, 30 million in 1994, leaves plenty of room and time for challengers to enter. Microsoft's strategy is to extend its electronic mail product to include some notes-like features while adding better networking and communications functions to the NT operating system and to Windows 95. To build and integrate these products, Microsoft has 250 employees in its business systems division working on a system it calls Microsoft Exchange. Unlike the more comprehensive and expensive Notes product, Exchange takes a modular approach. customers can build up groupware capabilities gradually, adding functions such as for electronic mail, electronic forms generation, and scheduling of meetings one by one as needed. If customers want these capabilities all at once, Microsoft will offer them a discounted package. Microsoft shipped a beta version of Exchange in February 1995 and should make a finished version available by late 1995 or early 1996. The company is also well-positioned to improve its market share in more integrated and advanced corporate software systems. Another product, called BackOffice, packages together the Windows NT Server, Microsoft's popular SQL for Structured Query Language Server for Database Systems Management, Systems Network Architecture Server, a product that connects old and new software systems, Systems Management Server, a product for installing software from remote locations, such as over the network, and Mail, for electronic mail services. Customers can also combine BackOffice with Exchange and Office for groupware capabilities. In the home, more promising than the office is the home, where an almost infinite variety of potential uses for the PC or smaller devices exists. Sanjay Parthasarathy, a group product manager in the Advanced Consumer Systems Division, explained how Microsoft is extending its reach to a new, for Microsoft, method of gaining revenues from average consumers. The idea is to offer products and services and then charge customers for each activity or transaction, rather than relying on one-time sales of packaged software. I run a group of business development people, about 8, who work with me to determine how Microsoft plays in interactive digital networks. We're looking at networks as different as cable, telephone, wireless, power. We're going from a company that builds packaged products for an upfront fee to more of an annuity revenue stream, at least in this new area, where you charge rental for your software. You give it away, and then whatever the software enabled in terms of transactions or capabilities, you charge per use. And typically, a home uses anywhere from 350 to 500 activities. Our role in life is to spread computing to the masses, masses who never used a computer, never want to use a computer. And you really have to take a very different approach to them, not just in the way the product looks, but in the way it feels, and in the way to collect money. Microsoft began its entrance into consumer software in the early 1980s, when it started experimenting with video games and other multimedia technologies. It was also the first large PC software company to enter multimedia publishing. Microsoft's first title came out in 1987 on CD-ROM, the text-only Microsoft Bookshelf, a collection of reference works. In 1988, Microsoft established a multimedia systems group and began work on new products as well as a technical standard, which it called the Multimedia PC, MPC. This allows any MPC machine to play any MPC CD-ROM disk. Microsoft also organized a consortium, including AT&T, CompuAd, NEC, Olivetti, Tandy, Zenith, and Philips, that continues to support and update this standard. The Multimedia System Group has since evolved into what is now Microsoft's Consumer Division, which had 1994 sales of about $300 million. These numbers are tiny by Microsoft standards, but this is the fastest-growing part of the company. The division owns the Microsoft Home brand name, ships a product a week, and covers everything from personal finance software to multimedia products distributed mainly on CD-ROM laserdiscs, but coming soon over the online Microsoft network. Microsoft now has some 50 multimedia titles and ranks fourth as a publisher of this type of material. The top seller is the under $100 Encarta Encyclopedia, followed by Cinemania, a $50 interactive guide to 19,000 movie reviews, and Art Gallery, a collection of famous artworks. Complete Baseball is another popular new product, offering current statistics on players and teams. CD-ROM Multimedia Publishing in 1994 only accounted for about $30 million in sales, But Microsoft is clearly cultivating skills that will be useful in home products that manipulate video images and sound, such as interactive TV and online information databases. As a foundation for bringing versions of its desktop applications, device networking technology, multimedia titles, and other new products and services into the home market, Microsoft's consumer division has also been developing what it calls a social interface, earlier codenamed Utopia. This presents a living room setting to the user rather than the loosely organized assortment of icons in Windows 3.1 or the desktop environment in Windows 95. It also contains intelligent agents in the form of cartoon-like characters selected by the user who appear on the screen. The intelligent agents observe and then adjust to the needs of different users, and they give spoken instructions to guide users through different tasks. These are similar in many ways to the automated assistants and wizards that Microsoft employs in products such as Word and Excel, but now they have smiling faces, personalities, and voices. The first usage of the new social interface is in a Windows product called Bob, which went on sale in March 1995 for under $100. Bob bundles together 8 introductory applications, including a letter writing aid, checkbook, address book, schedule, financial guide, and electronic mail. Reviews of a pre-release version found the product disappointing. The applications have limited features, the chatty advice from Bob and other guides can be annoying to some people, and the amount of computer memory required, 8 megabytes, is substantial. In its use of intelligent agents and icons, though, even critics admit that this social interface appears to surpass the Macintosh in ease of use and learning for novice computer users. In other versions of this type of interface, VCR and TV icons, among other symbols, appear on the screen and are relatively easy to identify and program through the PC with intelligent helpers. These should help Microsoft extend the Microsoft at Work style of technology to the home. Microsoft is also developing an operating system that will control home appliances or utilities, such as heating and air conditioning systems. This may use a new Wallet PC as the controlling device or a regular Windows PC. The Wallet PC should also be able to handle bank transactions and other information access tasks via wireless networks. In addition, new software for cable TV set-top boxes under development by Microsoft with Intel and General Instrument will deliver interactive digital TV services on existing TV sets. In yet another project called Tiger, Microsoft's research division is developing a network server system that runs on Windows NT. This will allow cable TV or telephone companies to provide video on demand. This allows users to view movies anytime they want, and interactive TV. Microsoft is not finding this new software easy to build. Nonetheless, it has hired specialists in the technology, entered into agreements with companies such as Sony and NTT in Japan, and scheduled trials for 1995 with leading cable TV and telecommunications companies in North America, Europe, Japan, and Australia. Another important product for the home is personal finance software to keep track of budgets, checkbooks, and taxes, as well as pay bills electronically and access investment data such as mutual fund or stock accounts. Quicken is the leader for this product category, but Microsoft has been more successful in making arrangements with banks and other companies such as Visa International to facilitate electronic payments. Microsoft Money can also read and convert Quicken files, and it contains most of the same functions. Microsoft would have preferred to acquire Quicken and its large customer base. Nonetheless, Money can serve as a basis for building up Microsoft's expansion in the home finance market, particularly if Microsoft bundles the software's features with other widely selling products. It has already set a precedent for bundling multiple features and applications products together with MS-DOS, Windows, Works, Office, and Bob. On the information highway, linking the desktop PC, Office, and home markets is the information highway, a growing and increasingly interconnected hodgepodge of online services, databases, and multimedia networks. These services include electronic mail, home banking, interactive television, and video on demand from special cable or telephone lines. There are also databases covering everything from electronic versions of newspapers and airline schedules to Hubble Space Telescope pictures from NASA. The information highway is not now a coherent system, and it may not become one. There are various carriers and multiple modes of access to independent systems. But Microsoft plans to extend everything it does to the information highway, as Steve Ballmer explained in a recent talk. We're in 5 businesses today, and we're trying to extend them all for the highway. We build desktop operating systems. We're trying to evolve Windows effectively to be the thing that runs in the TV set-top. We build server software through our Windows NT offering. We're trying to extend it to be able to be the server at the backbone of these networks. We build development tools. We recently bought a company up in Montreal called Soft Image, whose tools were used to produce the movie Jurassic Park. Why? We need to evolve our development tools to make it easy to offer this kind of content. We build applications for the home today. Why do we build products like a baseball product or a basketball product? Because they're just starts. They also should hopefully pay for themselves today. But they are just starts at getting a franchise to be the company that delivers information. Every time you publish rich information on a CD, you're simulating a lot of what that highway experience will start to be like. Microsoft's technical experts have experimented with designing intelligent fax machines and telephones. They have also observed the efforts of competitors to enhance existing single-function devices, such as telephones, fax machines, set-top cable TV boxes, and home game machines, and make these more like personal computers. They have concluded, however, that it is far easier and cheaper to make a PC that can receive a telephone call, send a fax, or view a home movie, than to make a telephone, a fax machine, or a television set that can do word processing, calculate spreadsheets, or perform all the other functions possible on a PC. New home video game machines can more easily take on functions similar to a PC. In fact, in 1994, Microsoft announced a partnership with Sega to develop operating system software to extend the functions of home video game machines. Because usage of PCs or similar devices will likely become more prevalent in the future, Microsoft executives and researchers see themselves as in a key position to package a variety of consumer technologies into PC software. Microsoft needs to extend Windows, however, as Ballmer elaborated. When you talk about all of this convergence going on from a technical perspective, it's wonderful. From the point of view of a software company, because you can write standard pieces of software. We can isolate 98% of all the work we do from the particular medium or the particular way that this information is traveling. So it's a very leveraged investment for us across quite a variety of different network types, as long as we take a long-term model of what things will converge against. We have a brand name called Windows that means a certain set of things, and our guys who work in the convergence area say, don't tell anybody that it's Windows that we're putting in set-top boxes. But if it's not Windows, there's absolutely no reason for Microsoft to be making the bet. We get no sharing, no synergy, no nothing. So unless we can use 80 to 90% of that software, it makes no sense. Encouraged by Bill Gates's personal enthusiasm for information highway technologies, Group Vice President Nathan Myhrvold is leading Microsoft's effort to launch new products and services, as well as create more exotic technologies not now available in the product divisions. He is also supervising a large and growing number of alliances, partnerships, and acquisitions. The scope of activities suggests that Microsoft is following an incremental but aggressive approach to entering a variety of new markets with enormous potential. Build up skills in developing and marketing basic multimedia applications products. Build up skills in basic networking and telecommunication software needed to link PCs and other devices to outside networks. Gradually add more multimedia and networking capabilities to Microsoft operating systems and relevant applications products in the hopes of transforming a large portion of the Microsoft customer base into Microsoft Information Highway customers. Acquire access to content providers or sources, such as rights to movies, artworks, or movie reviews. Form alliances or make acquisitions in pursuit of the above goals. Put the pieces together by offering multimedia products and interactive services to millions of Microsoft customers and non-Microsoft customers over online networks as well as cable TV lines and phone systems. Many pieces of this strategy are already in place. We noted earlier that Windows 95 includes a connection to the Microsoft network, which users can link into through a modem and a telephone line, or in some cases, through a cable TV line. This new online service, done in partnership with Telecommunications Inc., will differ from the competition. It will have simplified access, a very low price, such as $5 per month, about half of competing services. Few or no per-minute additional charges, these will probably be per product, service, or transaction, and a wide variety of easy-to-use features. It will include the usual electronic mail and access to the Internet, the gateway to most online networks, but the way to get onto the Microsoft system should make it especially suitable for the mass market. Most PC users today must exit their regular operating system and applications programs, then enter network communication software to gain access to an online network. With Windows 95, users just click on a button on the computer screen and the operating system automatically connects them to Microsoft, which then provides a registration application. If the users register, Microsoft will later bill them for the network and any special services and products, such as checking stock quotes or paying the gas company. AT&T and Sprint in the United States, British Telecommunications in the United Kingdom, and Unitel Telecommunications in Canada have all agreed to help Microsoft carry the service to 35 countries in 20 languages for access through telephone lines. Telecommunications Inc. will carry the network through cable TV lines as well as provide some video programming. In addition, General Electric's NBC television subsidiary will cooperate with Microsoft to create multimedia products as well as interactive TV programming. Customers of Microsoft products will also be able to receive support, for example, answers to common problems or replacement software, through the network, as well as updates of products such as the Encarta Encyclopedia, Complete Baseball, or Cinemania. There will be news, sports, weather, business, and technology information databases as well. Customers will have access to digital copies of artworks to display on their computers and eventually in their homes, as Bill Gates plans to do. Customers will be able to purchase products and services from other companies, including the Home Shopping Network and dozens of other companies. Microsoft is enticing them into this network by cutting prices and providing inexpensive, simplified tools to get their information databases or catalogs into online formats. To offer home banking and online financial services transactions and online stock quotes, Microsoft has established relationships with Chase Manhattan, First National Bank of Chicago, Bank of Boston, and other major banks. It is also developing software with Visa International for electronic shopping and theft-proof online payments with credit cards. If the expected 30 million or so people upgrade to Windows 95 or receive it preloaded on new computers, and just a few percent of these register for the Microsoft network, Microsoft will instantly become a giant in the $13 billion online services industry. This industry is growing at 30% annually and has tremendous potential. Only 5% of U.S. households subscribe to online networks, and customers on existing services from America Online, Prodigy, CompuServe, and other leading companies together totaled no more than 8.5 million in 1995. To some people, Microsoft may seem to be going too fast in too many directions. The idea behind these many moves, however, is to cover all logical bases. No one knows specifically how the new communications and multimedia technologies will evolve and in what time frame, although they are clearly coming together to reach ever greater numbers of people. And, as Steve Ballmer admitted, Microsoft does not need to make money in the short term with these new ventures or to formulate very specific plans. Microsoft executives are simply forming strategic relationships and placing bets to make sure that the company's revenues and technological skills do not decline on their watch. In terms of convergence in the highway, we're really out looking and seeking and trying to form the relationships that will be key. In our company, in the position that we have today, really, the single biggest risk is that something comes out that makes obsolete what we're doing technologically in the same way that something attacked what was going on in the mainframe and minicomputer world and stole away that customer base. It's both a scary and an exciting proposition because it forces us to continue to push and invest in some things that, frankly, from time to time, you can think are a little crazy and a little bit in advance of their time. We like to say that we did our first CD-ROM conference 7 or 8 years ago, and we're now making the first profit, on the margin, not on the investment, on CD-ROM titles that we develop. Our view is that, for much of the investment that people typically talk about under the rubric of convergence, it's going to be a long time before anybody makes any money. And we're certainly prepared for that. We go into this without a very clear-cut plan of how everything is going to happen. We just know that, with our current circumstances, it is not prudent for us not to be at the leading edge of investing in this technology. And it's not about technology. It's about what kinds of scenarios we can describe for how people will access and use information if somebody makes the infrastructure investment behind these technologies. Microsoft brings to these new markets more than just a growing variety of applications, extendable operating systems, enabling technologies such as OLE, creative and talented technical people, and the resources to form dozens of partnerships and new ventures. As we outlined earlier, in recent years, Microsoft has been introducing techniques that allow product development teams to analyze how users actually behave in great detail, figure out which features are most important to the largest number of people, and then build software products that appear relatively easy to use, even to the novice home consumer. Other key tools and techniques allow teams to evolve features incrementally and frequently synchronize as well as periodically stabilize their components during the development process. This entire approach is particularly useful in applications projects where program managers and software developers cannot fully anticipate or control what final products and individual features should look like. Chapters 4 and 5 now discuss the specific techniques and tools that make up Microsoft's sync and stabilize process for software product development. 4. Defining products and development processes. Focus creativity by evolving features and fixing resources. To define products and their development processes, Microsoft follows a strategy that we describe as focus creativity by evolving features and fixing resources. We break down our discussion of this strategy into 5 principles. Divide large projects into multiple milestone cycles with buffers and no separate product maintenance. Use a vision statement and outline specification of features to guide projects. Base feature selection and prioritization on user activities and data. Evolve a modular and horizontal design architecture, with the product structure mirrored in the project structure. Control by individual commitments to small tasks and fixed project resources. Microsoft's approach to defining products and development processes is not particularly new. Companies that have adopted similar incremental development methods include computer hardware vendors, such as Hewlett-Packard and Digital Equipment Corporation, computer systems integrators, EDS and SAIC, aerospace and defense contractors, TRW and Hughes, and electronic equipment manufacturers, Motorola and Xerox. Microsoft has been extremely effective, however, in creating a strategy for product and process definition that supports its competitive strategy. Microsoft tries to develop products for mass markets and set de facto standards. Its products also have relatively short development times and life cycles, and these factors exert tremendous influence. In particular, product development needs to be flexible as well as structured, and it must move forward as quickly as possible. State-of-the-art engineering methods or tools are of secondary importance. In slower markets, companies might also try to create a complete specification and then freeze the specification along with the schedule before they start writing code. Microsoft teams work more in parallel, as Chris Peters explained. I guess that's the thing that is different about high-speed consumer software development. Everything is being done in parallel, right through development. As soon as you have any kind of spec, or you start on any kind of a schedule, then the schedule's being refined while the spec's being refined, while the test cases are being redefined. But all this stuff is moving absolutely forward as fast as possible. You're not stopping. First, Microsoft teams try to understand users' needs and structure those needs into individual features. Then they assign priorities to these features and allocate them to sub-projects that break up a development project into 3 or 4 milestone periods. To sharpen and focus creativity in product specification and product development, Microsoft managers also try to fix project resources, limiting the number of people and amount of time in any one project. The fixed project resources thus become the key defining elements in a product development schedule. In particular, the intended ship date causes the whole development team to bound its creativity and effort. The team must define intermediate steps and milestones that work backward from the target ship date and coordinate product delivery with other Microsoft projects, product distributors, and third-party system integrators. Projects accomplish these goals even though the intended ship date almost always changes. There are some differences, though, in how Microsoft applies these principles of product and process definition to applications as opposed to systems products. Applications like Word and Excel, or consumer products like Works or Complete Baseball, tend to have shorter schedules, smaller teams, and more precise estimates of delivery dates than do systems products, such as operating systems. In particular, new systems products can have many new functions and require years and hundreds of people to specify, develop, and test. For example, to develop the first version of Windows NT, Microsoft needed over 4 years and a team of more than 400 people at its peak. Version 5.0 of Excel required a group of 100 to 125 people over an 18-month period. Many applications products, such as Excel and Word, also tend to be in their nth rather than the first release. This facilitates a more regular product development cycle and schedule estimation process. In terms of functionality, systems products tend to have more of an inseparable core set of functions that projects must complete and demonstrate as reliable, called being stable, before they can ship the product. It can be very difficult to delete unfinished functions from an operating system in order to accelerate product shipment. The need to develop and refine a central set of functions that execute correctly and efficiently drives the releases of systems products like Windows NT and Windows 95. The target ship date is of secondary importance. Applications and consumer products tend to have more independent features that projects can add or delete to meet competitive pressures, resource constraints, and delivery schedules. The vision statement and specification document for systems products, therefore, are more complete and detailed earlier in the life cycle than they are for applications in order to define essential groupings and interdependencies among features. Systems products also tend to have longer testing periods, including extensive beta testing. This is because of their greater need for stability and compatibility with numerous application products, networking systems, computing vendor platforms, and peripherals such as printers. Application products tend to have more standalone functionality and fewer product interdependencies, although this is now changing with an emphasis on sharing components, such as in the Office suite of applications. Microsoft's increased use of shared or common components has begun to reshape the structure of its applications. They were once standalone products, but they are now increasingly becoming compartmentalized and shareable. For example, projects can now flexibly arrange OLE integrated components into various operations or separate threads of execution. These components provide users with specific packages of functionality, such as for graphing, printing, or mathematical calculating. Users can also combine functions and objects of information from different products. For example, writing a letter containing graphics and spreadsheet data. Marketing and program managers, rather than developers, tend to drive the functionality required in applications products. They also apply user scenario modeling techniques, such as activity-based planning. Developers have more of a say in the functionality for systems products. Groups within divisions also have differences. Excel and Word are very similar, although Microsoft does not manage small consumer applications as tightly as it does these large revenue generators. In the systems and languages areas, for example, Windows NT was generally more carefully organized and managed than Visual Basic or Windows 95. Nonetheless, applications and systems products at Microsoft have a great deal in common, as do product units within each of the divisions. Most of what we write in the following sections applies to both types of software, as well as to all of the major products that Microsoft builds. Principle: divide large projects into multiple milestone cycles with buffers and no separate product maintenance. At Microsoft today, particularly in comparison to the 1980s, people try to be realistic but still ambitious in scheduling. A project schedule incorporates flexibility, but also provides a highly structured mechanism for communicating expectations and interdependencies both within and outside the project. Typical desktop applications projects, such as the next release of Office, Word, or Excel, are about 12 to 24 months in duration. Microsoft is moving toward alternating 12 and 24-month schedules for applications products, with the 12-month projects offering minor feature enhancements and the 24-month projects offering major feature and architectural changes. Both schedules might begin at the same time for a given product and run in parallel for the first 12 months, so that Microsoft ships a product release every 12 months. Major new operating systems products, such as Windows NT or Windows 95, however, can require schedules of 3 to 4 years.